go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we are. It is the 14th day of August, 2014. Yes, this program is live. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go to jump into the chat room. Some folks already have gotten there. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening, Embrant. Good evening, Sentient. Good evening, Will in Chicago. And good evening to veteran indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky. Okay, thank you, Randy. Loud and clear on iTunes on my Mac, Bob. Thank you, Randy, for letting me know. Marty, on the other hand, well, howdy, and already stream buffering. Not on this end, it's not. Nope, not at all. Thorn in the Side Thursday is what we do on Thursdays, and this here is a Thursday, so that must mean it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. And we have, well, we've got a veritable primrose thicket of thorns this evening with which to deal. You know, of course, that this program is listener-supported. We don't have an advertising contract with ExxonMobil or a company that makes vacuum cleaners that'll pick up bowling balls or some company that wants you to buy gold now. It's never been a better time to buy high and sell low and get yourself fleeced. Buy gold now. Nope, we don't have any of that either. The only thing we have is the goodwill of people who are absolutely determined that independent broadcasting will remain on the air. And that would be y'all. And it's pretty doggone inspiring along the way as well. We try to raise $150 every evening. We actually need to raise $160 this evening to stay even. And hopefully we'll be able to do that. That's 16 folks at 10 apiece, 8 at 20, 4 at 40, 2 at 80, you know, something like that. Any way you care to help out is fine. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, and that's where you also will find the traditional mail address if you prefer to go that route. Which means, yeah, well, just drop, if you're going to, drop me a note so I can tell Boss Man Wayne to, he can leave his spider-proof gloves in the truck when he goes to the mailbox. Yeah, Thorn in the Side Thursday. I trust you've been following the events of, Ferguson, Missouri. For anyone who actually cares about notions of real freedom, you know, not the I can choose between 29 brands of breakfast cereal freedom that we often equate to be freedom, anyone actually concerned with real freedom, cannot help but be at the very least disturbed by what's been happening in Ferguson, Missouri. And there was another night of it last night. And by night of it, I mean a night of police misconduct, a night of abuse, a night of attempted suppression of this most one of the most singular. Let me try this again. A night of some of the most brutal repression of one of the most singularly important civil rights in this country, namely the right to petition for redress of grievances. Last night, as the curfew came, the St. Louis police, St. Louis County Police, who were armed to the teeth, who had in fact aimed sniper rifles and 40 caliber tripod mounted machine guns at unarmed citizens through the day, moved to disperse a group of peaceful unarmed protesters. Looking at the situation, one Iraq war veteran said, "The police are now armed like I was in Iraq." It certainly didn't look like the United States of America last night, or it didn't look like what we understand to be the United States of America last night. Or perhaps the stylized notion of the United States of America. Dispersal weapons were used. Tormenting, sound-generating denial weapons. I guess they're little devices that get launched toward crowds that emit shrieking, ear-piercing screams were used, rubber bullets were used, gas was used. Yes, yes, the St. Louis police gassed American citizens. It was only tear gas. Bull. They gassed American citizens. Well, enough of me. Let's just check in on the audio because, and this is fascinating, the police, before beginning their crackdown, instructed members of the media to leave lest their TV trucks be impounded by said police. When they gave warnings for the crowd to disperse, they also warned media to turn all cameras off. Wow. What First Amendment? Now, is it a little clearer why for the past couple of years I've been saying that the First Amendment in this country is little more than a life support system for the religion industry? Now, see, had the crowd been made up of sweet Granny McCullens carrying placards of gory fetal material, would the cops have even shown up? But they weren't sweet Granny McCullen. They were people who lived in the neighborhood who were aggrieved over the slaughter of Michael Brown, unarmed, by the Ferguson police. And when the cops got rolling, this is what it was like.
See, now the line is advancing rapidly. Here they come. Share this link. Let the world see. The line is advancing onto the crowd. Here come the police. The line is standing. The crowd is peacefully standing with their hands in the air, yelling, "We are peaceful. Hands up. Don't shoot." Here comes the St. Louis County Police Department, continuing to advance their line. We have now pulled back a city block and a half. There it goes. There. Now firing onto the crowd. Out! Shit! They are firing rubber bullets.
Fucking stop doing that!
fired onto the crowd for a second time. Violence has erupted in the city of Ferguson. They are firing rubber bullets and smoke grenades. Their air is thick. Now they are firing them into the neighborhoods, into the back of people's houses. We will continue to broadcast. I'm wearing a gas mask tomorrow.
Yeah. I won't be queuing up Lee Greenwood's God Bless the USA tonight, I don't think. Information began, and that, by the way, that video and that audio can be found at YouTube. It's 25 minutes and 33 seconds long if you want to watch the whole thing. Just go to YouTube and search KARG Argus Radio Ferguson. And that's F-E-R-G-U-S-O-N, Ferguson. That was about the only footage that was to be had because they were the only people, the correspondent from KARG Argus Radio was the only one broadcasting live because of the success that the police forces had had in suppressing the media's right to do its job. We complain enough in this country, at least in this little community we do, about the many and myriad failures of for-profit media in this country. This was not their fault. Earlier in the day, reporters from the Washington Post and from Huffington Post had been brutalized by police. They were in McDonald's in Ferguson, Missouri. One was trying to charge his cell phone when the cops came in and demanded that they leave a public space, demanding their credentials, even though they were wearing their credentials around their neck in plain sight. Eventually, one of the journalists was slammed into a soft drink machine because he did not comply with the illegal order of the police officer quickly enough to suit said police officer. Another was manhandled and had his head bashed into a glass door, and on the way out, the cop looked at him and said, sorry. Yeah. Steve noting via email, if I had heard that 30 years ago, I would have sworn it was in Northern Ireland or a Soviet bloc country. I know. So First Amendment rights were plainly violated. The secularly sacred duty of the media, of journalists, to cover the event as a function of what is referred to as the Fourth Estate, was quashed. People engaged in no violence whatsoever were attacked. And today it has become apparent that the St. Louis County Police Department has all of this, the 40 caliber machine guns, the sniper rifles, the up-armored vehicles. They have all of this because of grants given out to law enforcement agencies during the 1990s war on drugs. This is one of the consequences, in other words, of the ongoing foolhardiness that is an attempt to change cultural behavior via prohibition. It didn't work in the 1920s, and it isn't and hasn't been working now. But it's also symptomatic of something deeper, isn't it? I have in the past referred to this country as a coward nation. Now, audio being audio, that could be misconstrued. When I say that we are a coward nation, I say we are a C-O-W-E-R-E-D, coward nation. We are a nation that is hunkered down, afraid to raise its head. We're scared of all kinds of stuff. We're scared that some Muslim fundamentalist fanatic might decide to reduce your local Wally World to a heap of smoke and rubble. Not nearly enough of us are afraid that some right-wing fundamentalist Christian fanatic might be willing to do the same, or perhaps a women's health care clinic instead of Wally World. I think that there is a national consciousness that, as the saying goes, something wicked this way comes. It certainly feels like it, doesn't it? Earlier today, Governor Jay Nixon, Democrat of Missouri, emerged from his spider hole, having boldly declared that he would cancel all appearances at the Missouri State Fair today. And in consultation with various and sundry agencies, namely the Department of Justice and mainly the Department of Justice and the Obama administration. Announced that the St. Louis County Police Department was being stood down. Pardon me if that's not grammatically correct. I don't think it's standed down. That they would be taken off of duty in Ferguson, Missouri. Mm-hmm. Instead, policing will now be done there by the Missouri Highway Patrol. I don't know about you, but that does not fill me with confidence. Because one gets the sense we don't that this does not arise out of a St. Louis County Police Department problem or a Ferguson, Missouri Police Department problem. This arises out of an overall police problem in the United States. Because virtually any day that you care to go online, you can find stories of a person being beaten, a person being stomped, a person being tased, gassed, shot, killed by the police in this country. And not everyone who has that happen to them is guilty of anything, let alone the idea that we just do summary execution by the police if the situation warrants it. Because this is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and on Thorn in the Side Thursday, we take note of those right-wing things that make us go, don't! Enter Joe Scarborough, who
He doesn't understand why those reporters had to get themselves arrested in Ferguson, Missouri's McDonald's.
Wesley Lowry of the Washington Post wrote, "As I turned, my backpack, which was slung over one shoulder, began to slip. I said, 'Officers, just let me gather my bag.' As I did, one of them said, 'Okay, let's take him.' Multiple officers grabbed me. I tried to turn my back to them to assist them in arresting me. I dropped the things from my hands. 'My hands are behind my back,' I said. 'I'm not resisting. I'm not resisting.' At which point one officer said, 'You're resisting. Stop resisting.'" And then there was the account of the Huffington Post's Ryan J. Riley, who wrote, "The officer in question, who I repeatedly later asked for his name, grabbed my things and shoved them into my bag. He used his finger to put a pressure point on my neck. They essentially acted as a military force. It was incredible. The worst part was he slammed my head against the glass purposefully on the way out of the McDonald's and then sarcastically apologized for it."
"Hey, sorry about your head, dear. Maybe it wouldn't happen if you goddamn reporters would stay out of places where you're not welcome. What business do you have here, outside agitator?"
Now, he didn't say any of that, but that's what goes with that territory. Jesus Christ, Bull Connor used dogs and fire hoses, but he didn't point 40 caliber machine guns at children in Birmingham that I know of. Al Jazeera got gassed. Yeah. But like I said, enter Joe Scarborough. Now, Joe Scarborough's a real goddamn working journalist, you know? From the jungles of Central America to the arid deserts of the Middle East, Joe Scarborough knows what it's like to be in a tense situation. Well, okay, he's watching all of those things on a monitor somewhere in a high-rise in New York City, but I mean, you know what I mean. He complained this morning. "I've been in places where police officers said, 'All right, you know what? This is cordoned off. You guys need to move along.' You know what I do? I go, 'Yes, sir,' or 'Yes, ma'am.' I don't sit there and have a debate and film the police officer unless I want to get on TV and have people talk about me the next day. I'm sure I'm just the worst person in the world for saying this," which means he thinks he's the greatest person in the world. "I can only judge how I would treat my son, who is a reporter who, if he were in this position, okay, well, you know what? Next time a police officer tells you you've got to move along because you've got riots outside, well, you probably should move along." By the way, in terms of press freedom, last year the United States was ranked 47th. I think we were maybe a notch above Iran. You see, that's, but you know what? That is that is the America that Joe Scarborough believes in. Because Joe Scarborough is right wing. Joe Scarborough, being right wing, is pro authoritarianism. So if a cop says move along, well, the First Amendment needs to get the hell out of the way. I mean, what real public good does it serve for somebody in California or Vermont or New York or Pennsylvania or Florida or Illinois or Montana or Oregon to know what's going on in, you know, little old Ferguson, Missouri? This is just a little bit of nothing. I mean, you know, black kid got killed, people got upset, and the cops are just there trying to restore order because that's what cops do with up-armored attack assault vehicles and 40 caliber machine guns pointed at innocent unarmed citizens. With flashbang grenades and gas weapons and rubber bullets and sonic devices
deliberately designed to harm people's hearing? Do you remember a few years ago? I can't, because I don't have the particulars, but it's probably worth going and finding. In the middle of some of the worst parts of the ongoing assault on the people of Iraq, as promulgated by George W. Bush, the Army began talking about crowd control weapons, sonic weapons, microwave weapons that would cause a sense of burning on the skin. And I cannot remember who it was, whether it was some Republican back here or some military type, who said, you know, before we use these things on the people of Iraq, maybe we ought to test it out on protesters back in the United States, or something like that. Maybe I'm a little off, but that's pretty close. Guess what? The testing has begun. I remember several years ago when some brave young people were trying to slow down a mountaintop removal operation in Appalachia. It was a Massey operation, and they had begun a tree sit. And they stayed for a very long time through some very, very nasty winter weather. But they also reported the use by Massey people of what they called sound weapons. And at the time, everybody went, what? And they said, yeah, it was this box or this thing that just emitted this god-awful sound that you couldn't get away from, and it made you feel like you were going to lose your mind. Turned out at the time that a current or former member of the National Security Council or something like that sat on the board of directors of Massey Energy. This is the 21st century. This is what you get. We're shocked that it's happening in the United States, but we ought not be. Now, I'm not trying to blow my own horn. See what I did there? But I've been talking for years now about life in a collapsing empire. And I've repeatedly said, in a collapsing empire, they don't put up a blinking neon sign that says, empire, collapsing, empire, collapsing, empire, collapsing, collapsing. No! Empires often don't even understand that they're collapsing. In collapsing empires, the power structure tends to try to simply maintain some form of stasis, some kind of status quo. And as the situation becomes graver, the attempts to maintain that status quo become more violent and more desperate. Ferguson, Missouri is not the worst we're going to see. Probably not by a long shot. The police have pretty much been caught red-handed in this. Their response was grotesque, disproportionate, overbearing, ham-fisted, however you care to describe it. And because of that, and because of the fact that law enforcement has been shamed in all of this, the next time, they may just go straight to the live ammo. However, however many people were peaceably assembled in the middle of Florissant Avenue in Ferguson, Missouri, do you have any idea how long it would take for just one of those tripod-mounted 40-caliber machine guns to eliminate the lives in every one of them? Hell, it probably wouldn't even take an entire ammo box. What's even more disturbing is that real, live, honest-to-God human beings were behind those weapons in Ferguson. People who went to work that morning thinking that they were doing the right thing. Who were just maybe 2 weeks away from one paycheck away from disaster, like so much of the rest of this country is. Someone who kissed his or her spouse goodbye in the morning, gave a little peck on the cheek to the baby in the high chair, strapped on the body armor, put on the military-style helmet, pulled the ski mask over their face to keep them from being identified, hid their names, and went off in service of freedom? Hannah Arendt had a term for such people and such conduct. She referred to it as the banality of evil. The people who aren't out there making it, well, yeah, there's Dwayne in the chat room. Our fellow Americans were aiming assault rifles at their fellow people for simply exercising their First Amendment rights after a person was killed under very suspicious circumstances. Yeah. And the meaningless, mindless prattling goes on. It's not just Joe Scarborough. You may recall a couple of nights ago in the discussion of the death of Robin Williams, we listened to a clip from America's Truth Detector, Flush Flimball. Yeah. Well, in almost predictable fashion, and all we did was run the clip. I mean, really, that is all we did was run the clip. It was just that man's own hate-filled, putrid words. But it was classically emblematic of the right-wing response to in many of these similar situations. Well, people know now what a hateful thing he said, and are pushing back, which means that Flush has probably gotten a call from the brass over there at Clear Channel Premier Networks telling him to dial it back. The PR is great, but dial it back, Rush. You've already lost 100 and some odd sponsors. I mean, it was bad enough, Rush, when you decided to take a big steamer on Michael J. Fox, who has Parkinson's disease, and you sat there with the camera pointed at you, jiggling all over the place like Jabba the freaking Hutt, in mockery of him. It was bad enough, Flush, when you referred to a woman defending women's rights to access to contraception as a slut. And then he ran out and described Robin Williams as having committed suicide because that's the way liberals are. Re-enter Flush Flimball stage ultra-right.
So after 26 years of being misquoted, purposely taken out of context.
Oh, do you hear the pouting? He was misquoted. He was purposely taken out of context. I think we're going to have to go back. Now, this is not, again, he's on, you know, this hasn't been cut up. There are no edits.
Now, what is the left worldview in general? What is, if you had to attach, not a philosophy, but an attitude?
Now, remember, he's being, when we're running this, we are misquoting him and taking him out of context.
Now, what is the left's worldview in general? What is, if you had to attach, not a philosophy, but an attitude to a leftist worldview? It's one of pessimism and darkness, sadness. They're never happy, are they? They're always angry about something. No matter what they get, they're always angry. And they are animated in large part by the false promises of America. Because the promises of America are not for everyone, as we see each and every day. I mean, right here, there's a story, Fox News website. Do you know? It says right here that the real reasons that Robin Williams killed himself were he was embarrassed at having to take television roles after a sterling movie career. That he had to take movie roles that were beneath him, sequels and so forth. And he finally had to do television just to get a paycheck because he was in so much financial distress. He'd had some divorces that ripped up his net worth, and he had a big ranch in Napa that he couldn't afford any longer and had to put up for sale, and a house in Tiburon he couldn't afford anymore. This is all what's in the Fox News story. He had it all, but he had nothing.
Which, by the way, and remember, we're not this is completely in context. How can you misquote somebody who was speaking for themselves? And by the way, whoever wrote that article on Fox, let's add them to the list of flesh-eating ghouls. But anyway, continue with your context, please, Flush. You, with half your brain tied behind your back and talent on loan from God. Margin call!
And everybody else laughed but was miserable inside. I mean, it fits a certain picture or a certain image that the left...
That you've created inside your own tiny... No, never mind.
...has. I mean, they talk about low expectations and general unhappiness and so forth. And right here it says that it was one of the contributing factors to Robin Williams deciding to kill himself was survivor's guilt. And I read this in the headline. I said, survivor's guilt? Whoa. What survivor's guilt? What? So I read it, and it turns out that three of his closest friends, the story says, three of his closest friends were Christopher Reeve, John Belushi, and Andy Kaufman. And the source unnamed in the story said that Robin Williams felt guilty that he was still alive while his three friends had died young and much earlier than he had. They could never get over the guilt that they died and he didn't. Well, that is a constant measurement that is made by political leftists in judging the country.
Okay. There was not a single edit to that entire piece. All right? Are we clear? The man said what he said. So now, let's go back.
Misreported upon, lied about, and all this stuff. Some of this stuff now is beginning to get to the point I need to comment on it. Most days I just let it go by, not wanting to elevate it. But what the left, and particularly the leftist media, is attempting to do in twisting my comments about the Robin Williams suicide yesterday cannot go unnoticed.
The left-wing media.
Where? Which?
I'm pretty sure that the El Gushbo is unaware of this little program. So to whom is he referring? This left-wing media. What, was there a write-up in the Cuban, in the Havana Daily Paper? TASS and Pravda are pretty much out of business. Maybe it was in the Chinese Communist Party Daily. Left. No, he's just talking about the ordinary, not at all left-wing, for-profit media. Because even the for-profit media have some standards. And no matter where we might think they are, if they are 150 miles under the surface of the earth, they're still higher than any morals, standards, or ethics that might be possessed by Rush Limbaugh, Jeff Christie.
In fact, I didn't even know that I was on the hot seat till I got an email about 20 minutes ago about all the crap I was getting. So what crap? And so I sent a series of links, all spawned by Media Matters. Media Matters took one thing, a bunch of, it took it all out of context and then fed all these other outlets and they ran with it.
I just ran you the clip from Media Matters that was allegedly taken out of context. That was several minutes of nothing but context. But whether it be Joe Scarborough prattling ignorantly along about Ferguson, Missouri. Oh, and by the way, he wasn't the only one. It's a steady parade entering from far right wing. And, well, as I've said before, they have to compete with one another and sort of try to get, it's sort of a limbo that they play. How low can you go? Enter Sean Hannity, the life support system for a haircut. Well, he understands that it was those reporters' faults for trying to, you know, report stuff. And by the way, I don't know how you are when you get pulled over by a cop. I know how I am all the times I did.
When a cop pulls me over, I put my hands outside of the car. If I'm carrying a weapon, which I'm licensed to carry in New York, the first thing I tell the police officer is, "Officer, I want you to know I have a legal firearm in the car." First thing I say to the officer, he'll ask, "Where is it?" I'll say, "It's in my holster." And he says, "All right, you just keep your hands outside." That's usually the protocol. And then, "Can I have your license and registration, please?" Move slowly. And I often would even step out of the car, lift my shirt up so he can see where the gun is. "Yes, sir. No, sir." Writes me a ticket. "Thank you, sir." And that's it. You battle the issue in court. I'm guessing that maybe, just maybe, old Shawnee has never, ever considered the issue of white privilege. Because, see, if you're a black dude and you say, "I got a gun," there's going to be a call for backup, 19 cops around you, and if you try to step out of the car, your ass will be ventilated so fast that you won't know which hole you're bleeding to death out of. Any disagreement? Yeah, move slowly. And you battle the issue in court. Dead men tell no tales, though. How's Michael Brown going to battle the issue in court? His ability to battle the issue in court was summarily taken away from him on the streets of Ferguson, Missouri, by a cop who blasted him and then let him fall where he'd been shot and then let the blood drain out of him for 15 minutes before anyone even tried to move the body. So back to poor misunderstood Rush.
The upshot, I think, there was on the part of media and Hollywood a genuine affection for the guy that is driving it. But there is politics. If you notice, the coverage is focused on how much he had, but it wasn't enough. He had everything. Everything that you would think would make you happy.
What, he was Richard Corey?
Oh, that's a poetry reference. That'd be lost on Rush. No, that's not what the coverage has been. He had so much, and no, that's not what... It's not the coverage I've read. Then again, I read the liberal media.
Yeah. But it didn't. Now, what is the left's worldview in general? What is, if you had to attach... not a philosophy, but an attitude to a leftist worldview. It's one of pessimism and darkness, sadness. They're never happy, are they? They're always angry about something.
Yeah. Skip a bit, brother.
Educational project.
He couldn't afford anything. Happy.
That's it. Every bit of that. None of it was characterizing what Robin Williams did or said, because I don't know, and neither did they. They were the ones offering the excuses.
Except for the fact that he was reading from an article published on a Fox News website that claimed to know exactly why it happened. And by reading it and sharing it, he endorsed the view. I'm guessing Rush dropped out of community college before he took that class in formal logic.
The reasons. They were the ones wringing their hands and lamenting how sad and unfortunate it was. I was trying to explain to you why. They are who they are. The daily quest on this program is to educate and inform people about liberals, because I think they are disastrous. The evidence is all around us how disastrous they are. So it's a massive educational project. By the way, the survivor's guilt, in that Fox story yesterday, in case you missed it, the claim was, again, this from somebody that claims they know why he committed suicide. And it's so unfortunate. Americans, it's so dark, and it's just, it's so miserable. Even people who have it all just can't get by. It's their worldview. Survivor's Guilt is three of his good friends, John Belushi, Christopher Reeve.
So do you hear this? He's doubling down. This is going to matter in a minute.
And the Andy Kaufman all died young, and he didn't. And he felt guilty. That's what the story said yesterday. Not me. I don't know.
No, you just read it and didn't challenge it.
Now, let's go to a couple of things here that just happened to appear last night and today that make my point for me as an exclamation point. First, in the New York Daily News, a piece by Jennifer Michael Hecht. Robin Williams dead at 63. Don't let Robin's darkness spread. Losing Robin Williams hurts. Many millions of people loved him wholeheartedly. Others saw him as brilliant but a little too earnest. So the pain is widespread. Makes sense that we're talking about it in the media and on the Internet. But it's also a real problem. Mass celebrations of people who kill themselves can send the wrong message and influence others toward hurting themselves. That's exactly what I said yesterday was my fear.
When? When in there, when he was talking about the pessimistic liberals, did he say it was his fear that there would be some sort of copycat suiciding? And since when do people celebrate suicide? Man. I read a story yesterday coming out of Martinsburg, West Virginia, in the eastern panhandle of this state, about a doctor who has been charged by the medical board with writing, she would go on vacation and just sign an entire pad full of prescriptions in blank so that her staff could fill it out with prescriptions for oxycodone, roxycodone, you know, that kind of stuff. She ran a weight loss clinic. She did not accept insurance. She dealt strictly in cash. If you showed up to get your script refilled, you had to pay cash to get it done. Along the way, this physician is alleged to have been very, very proud of her surgically enhanced breastises. The medical board complaint also says that she had a predilection for unbuttoning her blouse and showing off said enhancements. Touch them. No, really, touch them. First thing I thought reading the story was, oh, I wonder if this is Rush's doctor. You see, you can't say, well, it's easy to think that you can't say this stuff without having something badly gone wrong inside your brain. And there's nothing quite like a pill habit to make you just not think real good anymore. I mean, the man's already driven himself deaf in one ear, or maybe both. You do know that narcotics abuse can lead, severe narcotics abuse can lead to deafness. Now, I don't know what grade you assign to it, but when you're sending your maid out with a cigar box full of thousands of dollars and having her return with thousands of pills, is that severe narcotic abuse? I don't know. But I immediately thought of Rush when I said, Doc, how would you like to come and live in the pit with my wife? Wow. Just wow. They took him out of... we did. By playing his exact words in which he ghoulishly feasted on the dead flesh of Robin Williams, we took him out of context. Nice, huh? But, you know,
That's true, sentient being in the chat room. Psychopaths have no feelings. M. Brandt, Bob, please shut him off. Done, done, done. We're done with him. Well, maybe for the time being. You may recall the other night, though, that upon getting the news of Robin Williams' death, I said that I personally objected to the leap that people were making, and they were making this leap, to saying that the suicide had something to do with substance abuse. It was irresistible. Everybody from the New York Times to the lowliest Facebooker and tweeter seemed to have something to say that wanted to tie his death to drugs and alcohol. I said at the time that it was wrong to do so. I said that we cannot possibly know what motivated him. I also went on to note that my personal view is that each of us owns our own life. We have no control over when or where we come into this world. But I see no wrong, and neither have a number of other cultures throughout time. I see no wrong in deciding when to go out. There are caveats to that, of course. Children, teenagers, young people, people who really, really are mentally ill are not making an informed decision. But if you're not, and you decide to go, that's your business and absolutely no one else's. And you know, it is the fact that we stigmatize it that makes it impossible for an individual to have a rational conversation with loved ones about it. Wouldn't it be a lot easier to say, listen, I'm going now, and rationally give the reasons and have your goodbyes or whatever. I'm not trying to be morose about this. But because we have a social stigma toward it, that is exactly what does not happen. And instead, a person has to sneak around to actually engage in what is probably the most personal of all the rights a human being could possibly have. In the course of that discussion, somewhere along the way, I said something along the lines of, you know, who are we to make this determination? Would it be different were he sick? Guess what? Today, Robin Williams' wife, his widow, Susan Schneider, issued a public statement. She said, Robin spent so much of his life helping others, whether he was entertaining millions on stage, film, or television, our troops on the front lines, or comforting a sick child, Robin wanted us to laugh and to feel less afraid. Since his passing, all of us who loved Robin have found some solace in the tremendous outpouring of affection and admiration for him from the millions of people whose lives he touched. His greatest legacy, besides his three children, is the joy and happiness he offered to others, particularly to those fighting personal battles. Robin's sobriety was intact, and he was brave as he struggled with his own battles of depression, anxiety, as well as early stages of Parkinson's disease, which he was not yet ready to share publicly. She closed saying, "It is our hope in the wake of Robin's tragic passing that others will find the strength to seek the care and support they need to treat whatever battles they are facing so they may feel less afraid." As well as early stages of Parkinson's disease, which he was not yet ready to share publicly. And that miserable, flesh-feasting ghoul, Shepard Smith, said he was a coward. Yeah. And Rush Limbaugh said it was because of survivor's guilt. Or because he was a liberal. Now, with this information, we can have, and who knows, he might actually be pleased by it, an informed and public discussion about what the appropriate response is to a diagnosis of such a debilitating illness. Marty says, "Now I wish Robin had been able to seek out Michael J. Fox or Muhammad Ali." Maybe he already did, Marty. Maybe he didn't want to... Now, see, this is the speculation part. Do you remember what Rush Limbaugh did to Michael J. Fox? Knowing that, if you were in Robin Williams' shoes, would you like to be the next person that Rush Limbaugh jiggles and shakes and mocks for his illness? I wouldn't. I mentioned it the other night, just by way of kind of celebrating Robin Williams' life, I watched an HBO special of his online called Weapons of Self-Destruction. It was as funny as I've ever seen him. As I mentioned last night, he actually did an encore. And, you know, it's one thing for old Jimmy Buffett to walk off stage and then come back out and play Margaritaville as an encore, or Pirate Looks at 40, or whatever. I can't imagine being a comedian and walking back out, "Okay, I'm going to be funny some more now." But he did. And I don't even remember what joke he told. It was a story he told about hanging out with Walter Cronkite and Walter Cronkite telling him a dirty joke. That's what it was. And it was funny. But what he closed with, was very simple. He closed with four words. As he left the audience at Constitution Hall in Washington, D.C., Robin Williams said to the gathered audience simply, with his hands folded as if in Buddhist blessing before him, he said, "May we have health care." I haven't noticed that mentioned anywhere else in the media.
May we have health care? Yeah. So, hey, we have the Green News Report on the way. And something that I couldn't resist. You've probably heard this time and again, but I don't think you've ever heard it so beautifully delivered. Actually, and the magnificence of good delivery of material is that things that we've heard 1,000 times and 1,000 times, 1,000 times over suddenly come into sharp focus, and we appreciate the words as they were written to be spoken, and suddenly they are fraught with meaning. And so, before the Green News Report, and just as a reminder to the Rush Limbaughs of the world, and the Shepard Smiths, quite possibly the single most profound meditation upon life itself that has ever been uttered in the English language.
To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether it is nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles and by opposing any. To die? To sleep? No more. And by a sleep to say we end the heartache and the 1,000 natural shocks that flesh is heir to. 'Tis a consummation devoutly to be wished to die. Sleep, the chance to dream. Aye, there's the rub. For in that sleep of death, what dreams may come when we have shuffled off this mortal coil must give us pause. There's the respect that makes calamity of so long life. For who would bear the whips and scorns of time? Your press is wrong. The proud man's contumely, the pangs of despised love, the law's delay, the insolence of office, and the spurns that patient merit of the unworthy takes, when he himself might his quietus make with a bare bodkin. Who would fardels bear to grunt and sweat under a weary life, but that the dread of something after death? The undiscovered country from whose bourne no traveller returns puzzles the will and makes us rather bear those ills we have than fly to others that we know not of. Thus, conscience doth make cowards of us all, and thus the native hue of resolution is sicklied o'er with a pale cast of thought, and enterprises of great pitch and moment with this regard, their currents turn awry and lose the name of action. Fortuna, fair Ophelia. Nymph, in thy orisons be all my sins remembered.
It's Thursday, August 14, 2014.
Another day of sudden flood emergencies and high water rescues, this time in Long Island, New York.
Historic storms and flooding paralyze cities across the U.S. California breaks heat records again. China breaks solar investment records. Plus,
there's some nutcases in our country that don't believe in global warming.
President Jimmy Carter criticizes climate-denying Republicans.
All of those nutcases and more straight ahead. from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
This episode uses strong, potentially offensive language to refer to climate deniers, but it's probably still not strong or offensive enough.
Ooh, Jay of the Best of the Left podcast getting into our snarky comment game. Well snarked, Jay. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, we talked about it in our report earlier this week, but the rains had not finished yet in Detroit and had not even gotten to Long Island by that time.
Oh, yeah, the extreme weather hits just keep on coming. Historic deluges and dangerous flash floods breaking records across the eastern half of the U.S. this week, demonstrating the multiple, serious, and expensive impacts of global warming that are increasingly overwhelming our aging infrastructure. In Detroit,
the ground came up, and I just remember screaming at him saying that we gotta go. It's not safe.
A record deluge caused historic flooding in the Motor City on Monday that turned highways into rivers, killing two people, and also backed up the city's sewage system into the streets. Days later, divers are still searching for victims in completely submerged cars. In Nebraska, a hospital security camera caught the power and speed of a massive flash flood that burst through the doors of the hospital with the speed and force of a tsunami. Several cities, from Arizona to Massachusetts, saw record flooding, but none so much as the Long Island town of Islip in New York State, which recorded 13 inches of rain in just 3 hours, unprecedented in state history.
When was the last time you've seen it this bad?
I actually worked during Hurricane Sandy, and it's been that kind of day.
Islip broke the New York State record for heaviest rainfall in a one-day period that was set during Hurricane Irene. But this was not a hurricane.
No, this was just Wednesday.
Right. Now, why is this happening all at once? Funny you should ask. NBC News reports it's changes in the jet stream.
According to a recent study, extreme weather is due to a rise in blocking patterns. That's when hot or wet weather stays stuck over a region for an extended period of time.
Most scientists are not surprised. They've actually seen this coming for a while. We've seen these type of blocking weather patterns almost double in the last decade.
We've seen it coming for a while. We've talked about it on this show for a while. Scientists have been warning about it for a very long time, all during which the denialists out there have just been ignoring it as if there's nothing to see here, no concerns.
Right, and of course, good for NBC for mentioning that increase in blocking patterns, making extreme weather events more common.
So a blocking pattern is basically what?
Melting sea ice in the Arctic is changing the atmospheric air temperature. That's changing the jet stream, slowing it down, and that's what causes these blocking patterns.
So the systems stall, they can't move across the country as they normally would. Instead, they get blocked in place and just drop all of this water in one place?
Yep, but what NBC didn't tell you was the rest of the story. That new study also concluded that human-caused global warming is driving that increase in blocking patterns and extreme weather events. It's the opposite effect in California, where extended record drought is sending shockwaves through the global food market, raising food prices. And not helping, California is also crushing heat records. The first 7 months of this year were the hottest ever recorded in the Golden State, meaning that 2014 is likely to beat 2013 as California's hottest year on record.
So the fact that I have been whining about how warm it is out here in California over the past 7 or 8 months is not my imagination.
That's right. Now, the solution to this, says former President Jimmy Carter,
is denying it?
No, it's to cut emissions.
We need something like a carbon tax, which I think is the only reasonable approach.
In an appearance at a renewable energy conference in Aspen, Colorado, the 89-year-old conservationist who established the Department of Energy and warned of the need to act on global warming while in office way back in the 1970s, he laid the blame for inaction squarely on Republican climate deniers.
I would say the biggest handicap we have right now, there's some nutcases in our country that don't believe in global warming.
But finally, some good news. In China, they're already taking action. The city of Beijing just announced it is banning coal in its districts by 2020. And a new report shows China has installed more solar power in just the last 6 months than the U.S. currently has in existence.
Impossible. Fox News has told me over and over again that we can do whatever we want about global warming, but China doesn't care, and they're going to keep emitting. I guess Fox News was wrong again.
Yep.
Go figure. For much more on those stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help the Green News Report stay on your public airwaves. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Sixteen minutes past the hour. Bless their hearts, Brad and Desi love a good bumper as much as I do. This is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. After the two topics of the first hour, where do you go next? Wow. Bill in Helena, Montana, with a note says, "I was testing the fit of my tinfoil hat today, and the thought occurred to me that the militarization of police departments wouldn't be an end run around Posse Comitatus, would it? Just asking. You're not the first person to be wondering that, Bill. I'm not trying to take anything away from you, but yeah, whether it's intentional or not, it is an end run around Posse Comitatus." Who needs to have the military operating? And remember where Posse Comitatus comes from. Posse Comitatus law was passed as a means of forcing the federal government to stop trying to enforce civil rights being accorded to people of color during the Reconstruction period of the Civil War. But it has since been generally understood to refer to the illegality of using troops, the American military, to police on American soil. And under the present circumstances, having seen the array of force deployed by the St. Louis County Police Department, you can't help but think that that's, yeah, I mean, who needs the army? The police around this country are an army now. They've got tanks. They've got attack helicopters. They got drones. They got machine guns on tripod mounts and snipers. They march in infantry formations. They use military tactics in policing. They use grenades and poison gas on nonviolent citizens. So, yeah, Bill. Yeah. By the way, if you want to participate in the program, the lines are open. 304-574-8178 is the number, 304-574-8178. And Skype to Skype, if you've sent me a contact request, you can just get through at Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn, okay? Where next? Where to next? How about Edmonton? In Alberta, in Canada. From the Edmonton Journal, warnings about higher levels of air pollution in the oil sands. See, if you're writing in the Edmonton Journal up in Canada, you and you're a journalist, you can't call it the tar sands, because the right-wing government of Stephen Harper gets all uppity if you call them tar sands, because that just sounds icky. Everybody knows that tar is all thick and gooey and filthy and nasty and yucky. They're oil sands because
We're all going to get oil, and we'll be paying 10 cents a gallon for gasoline if only we can finish the Keystone XL pipeline. They're oil sands. Somewhere in Canada, there is apparently a goddamn style book that says, thou shalt not say tar sands, thou shalt say oil sands. Remember, an American journalist has been harassed on her way into Canada. Really? Yeah. For saying that she was going to Alberta, she had traveled to Alberta to report on the tar sands, to which a Canadian immigration official said, hey, we don't have tar sands. We have oil sands. I could refuse you entry just for that alone. Warnings about higher levels of air pollution in the oil sands have emerged in a new provincial air quality report that calls for further investigation into possible pollution sources. Oh, that's becoming one of the oldest dodges in the world. Yeah, y'all keep on polluting and poisoning people while we have another study. And you know how those scientists are. They won't say anything with 100% conclusive certainty. So we can just keep on going, well, looks like we're going to need another study after this study. This study certainly did illuminate some areas needing study. Hey, wait, is everybody dead? Oh, guess we don't need any more studies. The report shows polluting emissions in 2012 did not surpass the legal limit set out in the Lower Athabasca Regional Plan. Just two substances, sulfur dioxide and nitrogen dioxide, were measured. Oh, well, that certainly makes it more likely that it won't be found to violate any regional plans, doesn't it? Yeah, we didn't measure, no. We just measured sulfur dioxide and nitrogen dioxide. Didn't measure carbon dioxide. But air pollution rose to levels 2 and 3 and on a scale of 4 at several monitoring sites, mostly between Fort McMurray and Fort McKay. Level 4 is the legal limit set to protect human health and allow for economic growth. Two things, which when one is dealing with hydrocarbons, are almost absolutely certainly mutually exclusive. Level 4 is the legal limit set to protect human health and allow for economic growth. Hey, guys, no human health, no economic growth. There's no balance here. There's no balancing act. If the sole concern is not human health, you can forget about the economic growth. If we do not ask on the front end, hey, is this going to hurt people, then people will are guaranteed to be hurt. And a lot of them. Cancer clusters, heart disease, premature death, birth defects, lung disease. Right? It's important to understand the triggers are well below the legal limit, so we are not anywhere near an issue where we will have health issues for humans or our biodiversity, Environment Minister Robin Campbell said Wednesday. Oddly enough, without bursting into paroxysms of sarcastic laughter. Yeah, no, really. That's a real Lulu. Interestingly, photos taken from space of the tar sands hellscape indicates that there's just not a hell of a lot of biodiversity there. Environment Minister Robin Campbell said he's pleased with the report, and the warnings it contains give plenty of time to consult with industry and local municipalities. The goddess of irony never quits.
Anything? Anybody notice anything missing from that sentence? Campbell said he's pleased with the report, and the warnings it contains give plenty of time to consult with industry and local municipalities. Where's the reference to plenty of time to consult with people who already have cancer and are dying? Oh, wait, that's not there. People don't count. Economic development does. Isn't that charming? The legislation requires the government to take action when warming levels are triggered. His department is now trying to pinpoint the pollution sources. Ah, you know, call me crazy, but if I were to start looking at the pollution for the pollution sources in Alberta, I'd look at the tar sands hellscape. Oh, right. John in the chat room noting that all of those people who are getting sick up there in the tar sands hellscape, they're all smokers. Got it? Sure you do. Robin Campbell said, the system is working. The triggers are in place. And we've been proactive in working with the industry. Once again, nothing there from Robin Campbell about working with the human beings being poisoned. Working with the industry. Campbell, who, I don't know, maybe he's, or she, it's kind of a unisex word, name, is on the payroll. I don't look at this as having to penalize them, but rather work with them to come up with a solution for responsible use of resources. Hoo-wee! Of course, the industry probably wouldn't appreciate it if Robin Campbell had said, I looked at this as a matter of coming up with a solution for responsible poisoning of human beings. Man, you guys in Canada have caught the American disease in a big way, haven't you? Yeah, you're right, Stock and Larry in the chat room. We are all resources now, my friend. Yeah, come on, Bob. It's not personal. It's only business. Tell Michael, right? The 2012 air pollution data are 18 months old, but it is the first test of province's new regional approach to monitor pollution arising from all oil sands projects together called cumulative effects. That is a step forward. We've been arguing for cumulative effect analysis down here in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone for ages. See, what will happen down here is a coal company will submit a permit to blast the bejesus out of 233 and one quarter acres. And they'll call that Freedom Mine Number 12. And West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection will assign it a number. And then the same company will submit another permit to blast the bejesus out of another, 192 and two-thirds acres, and they'll call that one Liberty Mine Number 16. Okay? And then they'll submit another permit for, 315 and 7/8 acres
and they'll call that Jesus Mine number 34. And so if you're going through the permits and you don't know what's going on, you look at it and you go, oh, well, there's Freedom 12 and Liberty 16 and Jesus 34. Yeah, that's only 300 acres here. Only thing is, it turns out they're all next door to each other, and it makes up an entire freaking mountain. What cumulative effects? So far, the Environment Department's investigation has concluded no natural events such as forest fires contributed to the level 3 pollution. Uh-oh. Increased oil sands production would not necessarily mean more pollution because new technology is cleaning up emissions, Robin Campbell said, snickering. Yeesh. If a new project would increase pollution to hit the legal limit, it could be delayed or modified, or new technology could be required. Where in that sentence is, or it could be denied and forbidden from taking place? No, sorry, that's not possible. We don't do that. Because money. Right? Yeah. Hey, little tech note. I have no idea what's going on, but I'm having problems with Skype here. It doesn't seem to be wanting to sign in. So if you're trying to reach via Skype, bear with me. We'll have that sorted out in fairly short order. I love this paragraph, though. Environmentalists raised a red flag about growing air pollution in the region at 2013 hearings on the proposed Jackpine mine expansion. Environmentalists. You know, people of leisure who have the time just to sit around and worry about the sort of esoteric environment. See, even using the term environment, even using the term environment is a way of marginalizing people who care about living, continuing to live, people who care about cancer. Oh, here's an interesting comment in the chat room. Jethro says, Ferguson, Gaza, and Bob mounts his one-issue pony? Well, let's start. Piss off, Jethro. Second, you're not listening for comprehension again there, Jethro, buddy. Spent the first hour on Ferguson. Did you miss it? Guess so. Jethro's been all pissed off ever since Donnybrook on the Horn Facebook page, in which I and several other people, one of them being, I think, our buddy Carl, took issue with a bunch of religious malarkey about evolution not being real. Hasn't been the same quite since. So that's where that comes from, in case you're wondering. And, you know, I'm all for spirited discussion among people of goodwill, but there is a line to be drawn at religious hooey based on non-scientific fantasizing. You'll have that, I guess. Let's see. Here, let's give Jethro the attention he craves. All the hate you broadcast last night about Christians, but not a word about the Zionists? I didn't broadcast any hate about Christians. I broadcasted facts about Christians. That's what Prayer Meeting Wednesday is about, Jethro. You should know that after 10 years. Yep. So, you know. Man, you know, here's the fun part. Jethro is actually a West Virginian. He lives in the sacrifice zone. But he gives so little tiny bit of a tinker's damn about the people being poisoned here that he has the nerve to refer to caring about it as a one-trick pony. Nope, not a word on Gaza, Jethro. I've never mentioned a goddamn word about Gaza. Except that's a complete goddamned lie, Jethro. So, as you can see, if you're in the chat room, you have a troll among you. But, you know, the trolls ye have always with ye. Is anyone else having Skype problems? Sparky, could you check in via message in the chat, please? Because for some reason or another, this won't connect, and I don't have any bandwidth problems here. Ordinarily, you would be right, Texas T. Texas T says, trolls mean you're having an effect, Bob. Not in this case. Jethro went troll because people wouldn't go along with his assertion that human beings have been around for billions of years. I think that was the phrase. That's when he went off the rails. Now, I shared with you the story out of Edmonton, you know, my one-trick pony. That's a hell of a trick, that people being poisoned for money, for profit. I shared that with you because it takes me back to a note that we got from Paul from Parts Unknown. After his Paul from Parts Unknown birthday challenge, which was successfully dealt with, well, Paul wanted to offer up a little bit of food for thought. And he said, I know that we as liberals have a tendency... Oh, thank you, Jim. Jim says, telephone number goes to answering machine. That's because I can't seem to sign into Skype at all. Which is weird. Tell you what, stand by here. I don't want to make this a 3-hour filibobster. Make sure I'm signed out on other devices. Or let's see if I can sign in on other devices. No, I'm not signed in, on that device, and I'm not signed in on any of the others. Tweet coming in from Isaac. Haha, maybe Jethro works at Skype. Not hardly. But anyway, Paul from Portland. Parts unknown. I know that we as liberals have a tendency to compartmentalize and are willing to cut right-wing states loose when it comes to climate change. You have remarked on your program that there may come a day that large parts of Florida and Mississippi will be underwater with just a 5 to 10 foot sea rise.
there's an attitude among some liberals, I must admit that I've had this attitude sometimes, to simply say, well, I live in California or Washington and not near the beach, so I'll be okay. So, I cannot stress enough that environments are all interconnected and you cannot simply ignore whole sections of our country. As I've said before, to tackle the issue of climate change, it is going to take all of us. You know, I thought about what Paul had written when first I read the Edmonton story, and second when I heard the Jimmy Carter soundbite on the Green News Report. That's a central problem to the thesis, isn't it, Paul? As I've said before, to tackle the issue of climate change, it is going to take all of us. What happens when all of us is at least made up of, not, if not a majority, certainly not, then a significant plurality of people who simply refuse to acknowledge its existence? How do you run a, you know, how do you run an AA chapter if nobody refuses to quit drinking? Or, more to the point, how do you run an AA chapter if 37% of the people in the room are drunk off their ass? See the problem? Anyway, Paul continues, we aren't going to be saved by one individual, i.e. Elon Musk, or a single group of people like big business or scientists. It will take all of us, truck drivers, scientists, politicians, labor unions, tradespeople, electricians, carpenters, military, etc. And here's why. Disclaimer, Paul says. Disclaimer. Here's where it gets kind of scary, so brace yourselves for some scary thoughts. Part of looking at climate change and going forward is to think about these things in terms of energy and water. While most of our sources of power require water in some form, either running through a turbine in a hydroelectric dam or steam through a turbine in a nuclear or coal-fired power plant, the only sources of energy that do not require a large amount of water I know of so far are solar and wind. This is key as our sources of clean drinking water, as our sources of clean drinkable water become more scarce as we move further into the 21st century. So especially for nuclear power plants, because they need water to boil for the turbines and water to cool the reactor, they're usually built very close to large sources of water like rivers, lakes, and oceans. Fukushima in Japan was near the ocean for just this reason. I found a map from the NRC, Nuclear Regulatory Commission, that shows the location of all the nuclear power plants in America. As you look at it, and this is at nrc.gov/reactors/operating/map-power-reactors.html. That's a mouthful, but probably just search NRC nuclear reactor map. As you look at it, you'll see that a large majority of nuclear reactors in America are near the ocean. There are two in Florida, two in Georgia, two in South Carolina, and quite a few in the Northeast. Ever think about what happens to the environment when Three Mile Island is underwater? We can't write off red states and just leave them to their fate. We also can't just let them secede when they can't have their way and hope they can handle their problems by themselves. Their problems are our problems. I guarantee you that if the two nuclear reactors on the coast of Florida have meltdown issues due to sea level rise, it will eventually affect the West Coast and Europe. A quick glance at the map suggests about 15 to 20 nuclear power plants nationally, and they will be affected by sea level rise. I would be interested if you overlay the nuclear power plant map with the map you have that shows what the U.S. would look like with a moderate amount of sea level rise. How many of these plants would be underwater? The scientific answer is a lot. At some point, we have to come together as a people to begin to safely shut them down and decontaminate these plants before the sea level rise becomes a problem. We also have to get a big enough alternative power infrastructure to make up for the loss of power from those decommissioned power plants. That won't take a group of people. That will take a country of people. And that is how we have to start seeing this problem, as one we have to come together and solve. It's just not the fact that everyone can help. Everyone must help if we are going to get through this. I hope that I might have made some of the Horn family look at things from a different point of view. Thank you very much to the Horn family for completing my birthday challenge. Thank you, Paul, from Parts Unknown. And therein lies the rub. Oh, wait a minute. We played that line a few minutes ago, didn't we? We have to shut down and decontaminate these plants before the sea level rise becomes a problem, because we have seen how doggedly difficult it is to decontaminate one when it is overwhelmed by seawater, to wit, Fukushima. Unfortunately, and this is what makes so many of our problems seem so insurmountable. Unfortunately, we have a vast and very well-funded outfit out there that is devoted to nothing but arguing that nuclear power is our only hope. You are our only hope. You know? And then you have to deal with the people who think that it's all perfectly normal and that there's some vast government conspiracy to make people think that nuclear power is dangerous. Now, probably the simplest of all of these chores is, or under ordinary circumstances, is deploying a distributed grid of wind and solar. The technology is there. The materials are there. Good God, the jobs that could be had in this country if we decided that every house was going to have solar panels on it, there would be no one out of work. No. But again, you have to deal with, and that's the devil in the details here, you have to deal with the fact that this country can be absolutely rendered stationary, not by a majority, but from the Senate on down, by a mere plurality, a handful of people. All it takes in the Senate of the United States to stop legislation is 40 senators in a body that's made up of 100. And that is what can make for situations that are decidedly in Paul from Parts Unknown's words, kind of scary. More than. And there's an interconnectedness to all of this. Bill in Helena said he was feeling a little paranoid over wondering if the militarization of the police was way around posse comitatus. That ain't paranoia, that's reality. For real. For all intents and purposes, the powers that be are ready. Ready for you, ready for me. Ready for anyone who would try to put a stick in the spokes of the relentless search for profit at all costs and any cost and regardless of cost, as long as it continues to generate share profits or generate pure profits for the hedge fund, for the privately held hedge funds. They're ready. And no, this is not the Alex Jones portion of the program by any stretch of the imagination. It's just reality. So we will, I'm trying to figure out what the hell's gone sideways with portions of the interweb tubes here. And what's gone wrong with Skype. As quick as I know, I'll let you know. This is listener-supported conversation radio. And we'll take a break and be right back. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Enjoy the ride. future were sent off to the world court. Their plans for global domination were preemptively cut short. Their weapons of mass destruction were inspected and destroyed. Battleships dismantled, never again to be deployed. And the world breathed a sigh of relief after the revolution. Solar panels were on the rooftops, trains upon the tracks, organic food was in the markets, no GMOs upon the racks. And all the billionaires had to learn how to share. Was told to quit his whining when he said it wasn't fair. And his mansion became a collective farm after the revolution. All the political poets couldn't think of what to say, so they all decided to live life for today. I spent a few years catching up with all my friends and lovers, sleeping till 11, home beneath the covers. And I learned how to play the accordion after the
a bit of an interlude there. 4 minutes past the hour. This is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. That, of course, was David Rovick's After the Revolution. I think he wrote that kind of tongue-in-cheek. And before that, Hell in a Bucket, which kind of feels like where we as a species might well be headed. Or at least that's my view from up here on my one-trick pony. Let's see. The phone issue is resolved. So if you want to fire up the phone lines, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. It was apparently, I don't know, I think I've got a bum Ethernet cable, or maybe the Ethernet port has gone out on one of the units. Wouldn't be surprising. If you just want to reach out, Skype to Skype, of course, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. Remembering, of course, that Skype to Skype calls are completely without toll charges. And, of course, if you've got some sort of cell plan or whatever dialing plan you have, you may not even have long-distance charges anymore, so 304-574-8178 is not, hopefully, prohibitive. Let's see. Where else? Let's see. We did Canada. Let's go to... and you know everything going on here. Let's go to Mexico. The dateline on this is Mexico City. It is an Associated Press story. You remember how, what was it, the Mount Poly? Yeah, the Mount Poly sludge impoundment, the Mount Poly toxic waste impoundment that let go in British Columbia last Monday, sent 1.3 billion gallons of toxic waste down into a watershed, deprived no small number of people of clean drinking water. Yeah.
Guess what?
According to reporter Mark Stevenson, writing for the Associated Press from Mexico City, a civil defense official says a private mine... Oh, dear. Is there any possibility whatsoever that a sentence that begins, a civil defense official says a private mine, is going to have a happy ending? Yeah, I didn't think so. A civil defense official says a private mine in northern Mexico did not immediately report a massive acid spill. And by acid, we're not talking about the good kind, you know, squeegee in that third eye, squeaky clean. No. Allowing it to flow into a river that supplies water to tens of thousands of people. Carlos Arias, the director of civil defense for the northern state of Sonora, said the spill at a copper mine near the U.S. border was caused by defects in newly constructed leaching or holding ponds. Now, these are just ponds, you know, Opie and Sheriff Taylor are down there with their cane fishing poles and their little bobbers on the line and got them a worm on a hook in the water, and they're going to catch a nine-headed fish. Now, I ain't going to catch no fish at all. Ain't nothing alive in the sludge pond full of acid. It was just a defect in the manufacture, the construction of the pond. It was just a defect. I wonder how many gallons of toxic waste are in the pond. Such ponds hold the overflow of acids used to leach metal out of crushed rock. But Arias said a pipe either blew out or became unseated on August 7th, allowing about, oh dear, well, at least this was just a little one, about 10 million gallons, that would be 40,000 cubic meters, of mining acids to flow downstream into a river. No, really. Definitely, it was an error in the design or construction of the retaining pond, Arias said. He said the sulfuric acid spill, oh, it was sulfuric acid, nice, was detected by residents downstream the next day, and I wonder how. How do you suppose the residents detected the spill downstream the next day?
Mommy, why is my foot burning off? Mommy, why has our clean stream turned orange? Mommy, why does our water stink? Mommy, why are my teeth dissolving?
He said the sulfuric acid spill was detected by residents downstream the next day, and that the mine operators hadn't notified state authorities. Well, of course not, because that's a job-killing regulation, that notifying state authorities thing. Arias said tests have revealed the spill contains pollutants like arsenic above acceptable levels. One wonders how acceptable levels of arsenic are defined in Mexico. And I'm not saying that in a demeaning fashion. It's just the idea that there are acceptable levels of arsenic in water is laughable in the first place. Because it means somewhere, some administrator, in some sort of regulatory process, has made a determination that some arsenic's okay. Because, you know, if we can't let them put arsenic in the water, well, they can't mine the copper. And if they can't mine the copper, the company can't make money. And if the company can't make money, there won't be profits. And if there aren't profits, the world will end. No, it's the profits that are going to end the world, thank you. Water supplies from the river have been cut off to about 20,000 people. We're talking about the Buena Vista mine in Cananea, Sonora, owned by Grupo Mexico. Sought out for comment, Grupo Mexico just decided not to respond. just inside the 24-hour reporting time limit, Arturo Rodriguez said, well, the mine did advise his agency, he's the head of industrial inspection for the Attorney General for Environmental Protection, just right under the wire. Gee, I remember, what was it, 2 weeks, 3 weeks after, maybe 4 weeks after the Freedom disaster here in West Virginia, there was a 100,000-gallon spill of toxic waste from a coal prep plant up the Kanawha River from Charleston, and it took the coal company something like 12 hours to notify the DEP that they, Houston, we have a problem. Arturo Rodriguez further said that lax supervision at the mine, along with rains and construction defects, appeared to have caused the spill. Rodriguez said mine operators should have been able to detect the leak before such a large quantity leaked in the river. Well, sure, they should have. Sure, maybe they could have. But why bother? It's only water. In a desert. And that would, and reporting it would interfere with profit-taking. You see, if you report it, then the regulators show up and you have to pay them off, or maybe you can't pay them off, and they actually shut your mine down, and then you're not making money anymore, and the shareholders get upset. Or the heads of the hedge fund who loaned you the money in the first place. Isn't it interesting? Isn't it, this is kind of tangential, but isn't it interesting that we hear so much about the horrible, horrible, horrible drug cartels and problems and the death and the beheadings and the vicious killings in Mexico, especially, you know, in northern Mexico. And yet, here's this little old copper mine. Little? Huh. I bet you can see it from space. Here's this copper mine just chugging right along, poisoning the water of 20,000 people. Authorities are trying to de-acidify the water in the Bacanuchi and Sonora rivers by adding calcium. On the other hand, he noted reality. What you can't get rid of are the heavy metals. Now think about that river for a moment. Those rivers, the Bacanuchi and the Sonora. How long did those rivers successfully support life for thousands of people living in that area? 2,000 years? 5,000? 10,000? 15? And in 24 hours, one profit-obsessed extraction company ruined the water. Because, see, you can try to de-acidify the water, and eventually it will sort of filter itself out by the natural process of the flow of the river. But Mr. Rodriguez is correct. What you can't get rid of are the heavy metals. The arsenic, the cadmium, the barium, the copper, the lead, the aluminum, the manganese, the magnesium. Yeah. Can't get rid of it. Heavy metals are forever. The selenium. Oh, hey, I mean, they make vitamins with selenium in them. By the way, the tribal peoples who are in charge of the of fishing on the rivers that were affected by the Mount Polly sludge dam breach, I saw earlier today a notice that they had issued closing the rivers for fish taking, you know, subsistence fishing. The reason they cited in closing down the river for fishing purposes is that in the wake of the Mount Polly disaster, fish have been showing up with their skin peeling off.
Not just sort of dead fish bobbing along on the river there. No, 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 no. One minute they're living fish swimming in the stream, and the next thing they're fish skin begins to peel off. Because money! Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hey, Edward.
Let me turn the speakerphone off.
Okie doke, we can do that.
There. Well, I just thought I'd call and tell you, I don't know if we've got anybody left in Dallas or not. Everybody this past week's been trying to shoot each other.
What?
Well, up in Frisco, I'm sure you don't get that on the news, but up in Frisco, this 16-year-old shot his mother and father, killed them both, blew them away.
Oh Jesus! Was that the deeply secluded homeschool kid?
Yep.
Oh God.
Yep, that's him. Then we had shootings at apartment buildings, at shopping centers. Some guy goes to a shopping center and just shot the windows out of the businesses there. Fortunately, nobody was killed. I mean, they've just been shooting like crazy. I don't know what's wrong with this place.
Is it the heat, or is it just Texas?
I don't think it's the heat, because, I mean, that's nothing unusual here. But I don't know what's wrong with them. Maybe there's something in our water that's causing it.
You know, you may say that sort of offhandedly, Edward, but eventually that kind of thing can happen.
Well, maybe so.
I mean, arsenic, mercury. remember the Mad Hatter from Alice in Wonderland?
Yeah, that was because of what they used. What's it, arsenic in their heads?
Mercury.
I knew it was one or the other.
Yeah, they used mercury for felting of the pelts that were turned into hats, mm-hmm. And that's why hatters were notorious for eventually going quite insane, because mercury destroys your brain, and it's a neurotoxin.
Yep.
And it's worth remembering. And really, it's an interesting combination, Edward. It's worth remembering that your state is one of the most single most polluted states in the Union.
Oh, I'm sure. And now they're fracking like crazy around here. So, what is one to do? I could,
lock the doors and windows.
Well, I do that.
but the problem is, we live in a civil society, and thanks to the gun goons and the open carriers and the ground standers,
mm-hmm.
and the freedom protectors, a simple trip to the grocery store in 2014 America has become an adventure in defending your life.
Yeah, it's like walking through a minefield. You never know when some idiot is going to go berserk or whatever they do. Oh, well. You know, I grew up around guns and everything, but I never knew of anybody that shot another person. The only person I ever knew that was killed by a gun was he owned our local dairy. I've always remembered it because the bottles of milk would have that beautiful cream rise up on it.
Oh.
And I can remember those bottles clanking as he brought the milk every morning and set it up on the
table. And it would be cold, and in the warm air, the condensation would form on the bottle.
Oh, yes, it was wonderful. And then we'd scoop the cream off, and and we liked it on hot biscuits, just the real thick cream on hot biscuits.
Oh, you're killing me. Oh.
Oh, my. Well, and fish, for heaven's sake. We had fish several times a week, all sorts: shrimp, a crab.
Don't do that anymore. I mean, for instance, pregnant women or women of childbearing age are advised in modern 2014 United States not to eat fish more than once per month.
Yeah, it's full of mercury.
Yeah.
Well, we used to, when we wanted clams, we'd go down to the store, go out with our rakes, dig our clams, and you can't do that anymore. They're polluted. All sorts of seafood that we love, shrimp, and I wouldn't eat any of those shrimp out of the Gulf. I mean, they're blind, and they crawl around on the bottom.
Some places are better than others, but just generally, no. I mean, the shrimping season starts, the shrimping season in the Gulf moves from east to west. So it'll open on the Florida Panhandle,
mm-hmm.
and it'll eventually work its way west all the way to, you know, Corpus Christi.
Mm.
And depending on the flow patterns and where, you know, for instance, where the Deepwater Horizon disaster carried things, that's where you don't want to eat. But for instance, we've got a funky little restaurant culture in the little town not far from where I live, and the only combination Cajun low country restaurant in the entire state of West Virginia is in Fayetteville. And they do yummy work. And they used to pride themselves on the fact that their oysters and their shrimp were flown in daily from the Gulf. Now, if you ask them, they'll tell you, oh, no, 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 we don't, you, no, no seafood from the Gulf.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we used to, one of the big things we used to have on a Saturday evening was an oyster roast.
Oh, golly.
And my cousin Fred, he was Cousin Edna's oldest son, and Fred could open oysters faster than any human I've ever seen in my life.
He was a shucker.
Oh, he sure was. Let me tell you, I never saw anybody shuck that fast in my life.
See, now you got me thinking about a whole bunch of different things. There's a little joint down in the Shoals in Alabama,
mm-hmm.
Over on the Sheffield side of the Tennessee River, and they offer up grilled oysters.
Ooh.
Now, that's not to say that you're taking the oysters and throwing them on a grill. No, what they do is they'll shuck the oyster, and they'll loosen him up in the shell, and then they'll put a little bit of seasoning on him,
mm-hmm.
and just set him on the charcoal grill.
Mm.
And turn it up with all that, and the hickory, or the, whether it's hickory, will kind of engulf them, and they shrink a little bit because they cook a little bit. And you want to talk about 16 shades of good. Oh, my goodness.
Well, when we had our oyster roast and everything, they had a pit, and they would burn the fire in there and then put this wire grill thing on top of it. And then you put seaweed on top of that, and then you put your oysters and corn on the cob and crabs and all that stuff. And then put some more seaweed on it, and every now and then sprinkle some water on it. It was really very tasty.
You're devastating me. And, that's okay. By the way, I have to mention this because I've mentioned it to a lot of other people. I'm spreading the gospel of microwave corn on the cob.
I've already done it. I've been doing it for years.
Isn't it wonderful?
Yes, it certainly is. We love it.
Wow, this makes me sound shallow and lazy, but if you're doing a bunch of corn on the cob for people,
mm-hmm.
like a whole pot full, you got a whole bunch of boiling water, and mm-hmm. then you got to shuck, and you shuck, and you shuck, and you sit there, and if you're really obsessive, compulsive like me, it's like, I got to get that last little silk, that little sucker stuck between the kernels.
I use a toothbrush to get it out.
Oh, I'll be dipped.
It works real good.
Oh, I'll bet it does. Next time I have to shuck corn instead of microwaving it, I'll take that into account.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't advise using your own toothbrush because then you'd have corn silk in your teeth.
No, I think I'll, they're pretty cheap. I think I'll buy a brand new one just for the occasion. Won't even use the one I use to scrub the grout.
I wouldn't use that one either. Well, it might make your teeth white.
Or make them go away altogether.
Yeah, I could do that too. Oh, mercy. Well, I just thought I'd call and tell you about all the gun carrying on here in Dallas.
I hate that I even feel like I need to say it, but, you know, be careful out there.
I don't even want to go to the grocery store anymore. I mean, somebody may pick up something that doesn't suit their fancy and just go into an absolute fit right there.
Because you don't know.
Have you heard about this group of women who are coming back against these guys at toting guns in Target?
Oh, Moms Demand Action? Yeah.
Well, these women, they see some guy with toting a gun, they pull their blouses off, and they become topless, and they follow them around all through the store.
Oh, yeah, that group, too. Yeah, them I heard about as well.
Yeah, I think that's just absolutely wonderful.
Well, speaking of topless, I had this for yesterday's prayer meeting edition, but didn't get to it. There's a church full of weirdos, you know, all hung up on the human body and filled with shame, and, you know, because Jesus wants people to be ashamed. And what they've been doing, this collection of weirdos at this church in Ohio,
mm-hmm.
is they've been going to a local strip joint and trying to intimidate the strip joint into closing. They stand out and they picket and they try to identify people that they know who are going in, and then they try to tell people who went in and who went out, and they write down tag numbers like anti-abortion protesters do. And the strippers finally got sick of it. So you know what the strippers did, Edward?
What?
They picketed the church.
Well, why not?
And a few of them.
Got it fair play.
And a few of them, shall we say, did so in their work clothes. To wit, nothing.
Oh, my. Oh, pasties galore.
Oh, I don't think there were pasties involved.
Oh, but it didn't even have pasties on.
No, I think Ohio's one of those states where you can take it all off, as long as there's no liquor being served.
My word.
And I don't think I don't think they had a liquor license at Pastor Whackbottom's the House of Holiness.
Only served them right. Well, there's the church there about 6 miles out in the country from my hometown. I won't tell you what kind of church it is. But anyway, the minister was having a little, thing with one of the sisters, and his wife had his phone tapped. Oh, it was just a big mess. And, I mean, these are a foot-washing group of people.
Oh, the fun ones.
Oh, yeah.
Do they do they dance?
They do everything but. Now, I guess you could call that dancing. Sort of, I guess.
The horse.
I don't think he and the sister were dancing. Okay. Well, they probably were. I've never tried it that way.
Goodness me.
I've missed something in my life, but I've never done it dancing.
Dadgum it. Well, you know, put it on the list, Edward. Put it on the list.
Before I die, I'm going to do it dancing.
Sounds good. I mean, you're all married up and now. It's probably legal.
Well, I think it is. And there are two friends of ours. Both of those families have gotten hitched, too.
Oh, good.
Yeah. How about it? We're within like a mile of each other.
Well, it seems pretty obvious to me that you're leading Texas up down the primrose path to hell, Edward.
I offer my
congratulations to you on the journey.
Well, I try my best.
That's all any of us can do.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Oh, I love to sin.
Well, yeah, I'd rather. Well, we quoted Billy Joel last night. I'd rather die with the sinners than live with the saints, because sinners have so much. Because sinners have much more fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I heard a funny joke. You may have heard it. This fella dies, and he requests 72 virgins, and he goes to heaven. And St. Peter, he's talked to him, and there are all these old men. He said, well, where's my 72 virgins? And St. Peter said, oh, my God, I'm sorry. I thought you said 72 Virginians. Wouldn't that be a shock?
And there stands George Washington with the wooden teeth. That's got to hurt.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you take care. Enjoy talking with you again.
All right. You have a wonderful evening, Edward. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, and I'll try to stay out of the gunfire.
No kidding. Jeez, what a world.
That poor kid up there. What in the world was he doing?
Defending freedom.
I'm doing something. Oh well.
Yeah.
Take care.
All right. You too, Edward. Bye now.
Bye bye.
Our dear friend Edward calling from Dallas. I'm sure you've seen that story by now, right? A very, very sheltered homeschooled child got hold of the family's freedom protector and wasted mommy and daddy. Wow. See, that's the thing. Here we have Ferguson, Missouri, with a bunch of cops training 40 caliber machine guns on peaceful protesting citizens of the United States. And these guys, and I presume women, have been through some degree of psychological examination or evaluation before they get turned loose with the hardware. Private citizen? No. No, it's easier to get a firearm in this country than it is to get a fishing license. Go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Bill, what's happening?
Oh, man. You know how heart sick I am at this stuff in Missouri? Heart sick.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, I'm so damn cynical, Bob. That doesn't happen often, you know?
No, you almost feel like a lifetime has inured you against such heartbreak.
Yeah, about 15 or less minutes more, I'm sitting now. I was in East Cleveland and in the 60s and taking my then girlfriend back to the nursing school, and National Guardsmen were riding around with a 30 cals, you know,
yeah,
in the back of a Jeep. And it's funny, it didn't scare me that much then, because we had a... Oh, another time I was working downtown, and I'm working for a newspaper from the printed out of New York, but it's a typist set everywhere. The typist set in Cleveland, the typist set in Chicago, anyway. WRCJ. I had a funky job in the Journal helping them, pulling off tape and separating it into tape, which was the typeface size, you know?
Yeah.
8.2. Whatever, and I had to get home. That it was a nighttime job because, you know, the Journal came out in the morning, you know, and Dr. King had just been killed that night, and I'm saying, well, how am I going to get home tonight, you know, which route to take without getting shot at, because I fully expected, you know, all another break, and it was good than I expected it. I'd be angry enough, that's for sure, you know.
Well,
nowadays, this doesn't upset these kids today. They have, I don't know whether their concept is different than mine or what, you know?
People appear to be upset enough in Ferguson, Missouri, Bill. I mean, that's the whole crux of the matter. You know, people, they're not just upset, they're furious. And they got a right to be. and they've got a right to want they've got a right to want a complete and full investigation of why it was that 18-year-old Michael Brown was gunned down with his hands in the air.
Yep. I mean, in the midst of real action, stuff happens, you know. But there's a difference in the way of where the action is. And a man's got his hands in the air. It just bothers me. And I wonder, I have a good friend of mine, a guy who just replaced some beautiful shelving in a 1932 bookcase that I had sitting here. His son's a detective in Cleveland. And we've talked about it. My buddy and I have talked about it. He said, well, we know your attitude about cops. I said, no, my attitude isn't bad about cops. I used to, one of my best friends was a detective in Cleveland who we used to fish together. Because he was always good for a few inside stories on stuff he was working on, you know, or had worked on. And so, you know, there's always something going on. And because it was part of the, it used to be part of the job that occasionally firearms were used. One of my favorite cops in the world was a private cop from University Circle Police. We had some holdups on a rapid transit stop. And he came up, and he approached from the angle because they had cameras up there. And Bob, you and I know the problem with a real hold up non-artist, a druggie, doper, heroin, you know, the stuff that the dope is pushing it, a person's harder than they're all pushing it. I'm seeing that too well.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
But how do you see that? Well, be around the business I was in, and you'll see a lot of stuff that you don't ordinarily see, you know? Just be in the bar business at some angle or the other. If your eyes are open, you'll see stuff, you know? One of my favorite stories is there was a guy here, he was a East Indian. And I use the pronunciation, you wonder why the word Indian started to be used?
Why is that?
British pronunciation.
Oh, yeah, India. In fact, Rudyard Kipling in Gunga Din spells it out that way because he writes it in dialect, and it's now an Inja's sunny climb where I used to spend my time. Yeah.
Well, this guy hires me to do it. He owned a strip club on the west side of Cleveland, and he owned a bar down in back of this stadium, they still call the new stadium, which I've seen games there and was not overly impressed with it, but, about 4 weeks ago, I was cruising with some friends of mine past a place that used to be called Dunn Field in 1920 when the Indians played for the title for the World Series. And now it's Weed Park and they're rebuilding it. It's kind of cool to go by the old place and watch this old style park. You know, a lot of it still is being put back together. So anyway, this guy calls me and he books me. And then he stiffs me. Two or three Fridays in a row, he stiffed me. Calls me up in the morning and says, well, I'm canceling your job. And I wrote contracts for these people, Bob. I didn't play games with these club owners.
No.
So they don't, you know, they're not musicians. So they don't know what a contract is. They look at me like...
A lot of them also don't know what a musician's union is.
Well, yeah.
That's on purpose.
That's defunct. And I would spell that defunct. Defunct, I guess you call it, defunct, so to speak. Different way of spelling it. So this guy hung a check on me. I was living in Lake County, and my wife was, at that time, my second wife, her job was she ran the battered women's shelter. That was a fun job, too, because I always had people calling the house and threatening it.
Yeah.
You stole my wife, and I'm going to come down there and list all the things they do for me, and I'd call Cleveland Police, and I was living in Cleveland still, and register a complaint with the guy's name. You see, people were so dumb, Bob, they used the name.
Nice.
They're going to tell you who it is, you know. Okay. And the Cleveland policeman would tell me, Bill, well, you know what to do. He comes down. You call us and try to get into your house. You know what to do about that, QSD. Yeah, that Mossberg has five rounds in it. It will change the shape of the man very quickly. Because, oh, you're hostile, Bill. No, I'm not. I'm hostile as if I went out looking for this guy. And call him and say, hey, why did you beat up your wife? I'm not coming against you. You know? That's hostile, you know. But some guy calling my house and threatening me, that's not hostile anymore. That's, okay, Paul, you know. You report it legally and then just make sure. Because by reporting it legally, you're hopefully protecting yourself so you call and something gets done about it. Or if the guy tries raising hell, you've got it on record that he threatened you already, which helps you pick up the pieces. Because I don't know if people know that blasting somebody leaves you with a big bag you're holding right there, Bob. Theoretically, that's what it should be anyway.
Yeah.
I know this policeman I know, he came up from the side, and they had cameras going. This guy had let two or three rapids go by and just stood there. So the cop wanted to talk to him because the cameras had a description already of this guy. Because that's the one thing about having a society with cameras all over the place. You get a look at them. And this guy pulled an automatic, another gunner with an automatic. The gun misfired a couple of times, and my buddy, this officer, he dropped him. He killed him. And I saw the cop the next day. He was working part-time at a full market. And I said, well, what do you think? He said, no, it feels terrible. He says, you don't like it. And, of course, he gained a lot of points in my eyes. He didn't stand there and brag about it, you know. Having to shoot was not something he wanted to do. But all of a sudden, I've seen a change in attitude with people, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what scares me. And I'm trying to figure out sociological where this attitude has changed in 30 years. Well, it wasn't the same attitude they had in the 20s or the prohibitionist theory, you know?
Yeah.
It's actually gotten a lot more intense. This madhouse situation has gotten really intense.
I'm reading, you might take a little heart. I'm reading that people are gathering all over the country, Times Square, Oakland, Detroit, San Francisco, gathering all over the country in support of the people in Ferguson, Missouri.
Yeah.
And that's pretty inspiring.
That's what would have happened years ago, too. There had been a lot of, in the 60s and 70s, there would have been a lot of mass outcroppings of anger. I sometimes thought that the anti-war attitude during Vietnam was very popular with people because it was a long line set up, Bob. In other words, there was a lot of people eligible to go fight. And when they went to a volunteer army, it had me thinking, well, is it a positive thing that they're doing that, or is it the... Because a lot of problems with Vietnam and why people's anger grew against Vietnam was when their kids who had been drafted came home and started telling the truth about what they'd seen over there.
And what they'd been through, exactly.
Yeah.
Far from being spat upon, they came home and they spoke their truth. And the right wing despised them for it.
Yeah. There's so much of these right wing offers that overnight show was run by the guy that was originally out of Michigan. He took over from the guy from Forum for Nevada, you know that guy.
Yeah.
He took over from him. And there's a lot of this publication of books. There's one that just came out glorifying Allen and George Foster. I'll let you fill in the last name.
Oh, the Dulles Boys?
Yes, sir. Because there's been so much written negative about those guys. I used to glory in the fact that I'm actually a guy who knew about Operation Vulture. That there was talk of dropping potential nuclear weapons around D&B and Fu to help the French out in Indochina. I say Indochina, and people say, Bill, what is that? Is it a paint color? No, it's not. Because, you know, in those days, the colonies, the names changed. You couldn't buy a globe fast enough to keep up with the changes in the society. I remember Patrice Lumumba, for God's sake.
Yep.
And who he was. And people say, Patrice, well, who is he?
I've talked about too much crazy shit this evening. I can't take Patrice Lumumba. Who was she? Wasn't she on Good Times?
Yeah, people all get work. Bobby, you can do that southern accent because I don't want to openly dislike a part of the country that has produced some awful great things in our lifetimes. You know?
Sure. No, my God, you know, the literature of Faulkner and Eudora Welty and heavenly days, the music and on and on and on and on. But my God, it all has to be balanced, Bill, against, say, the woman in Oxford, Mississippi the other day who declared that the university was a Confederate school built by Confederates for Confederates by in a Confederate state. Damn. You know, I mean, just damn, Sergeant Carter.
Was there one college, any college that ever was started in those 4 years? I think so. I think the Confederate other places to put their money. And not enough of it to put anywhere. Or they had money, but they put it somewhere, but they couldn't get it into the country. The blockade was killing them. The blockade doesn't get the notice that it should have or what shut the Confederacy off. When you can't get stuff shipped in and you can't build it, then what do you do? You're wishing one wind and you got another
see,
one.
Yeah,
too,
see which fills up first, exactly.
But this stuff today frightens me, and I think I've told the story enough times about playing a hullabaloo job and being told on a Saturday that the guys in Kent had burned the ROTC building, and my first reaction, after having written some term papers on the New York draft riots in 63, by the way, the draft riots in 63 in New York were fairly spontaneous because of taking the poorest man in the country at that time, the poorest white Northerner was, generally speaking, if you want to generalize, Irish immigrants. And that's, you know, they had a set to down in Richmond in 1862, a bunch of hungry women who could not get by food. They picketed Mr. Davis, President Davis. Not thickened, but outright there was some public demonstrations about where's our food. Our men are in front of Richmond, they're out west dying, and there's no food here.
Yeah.
Like I said, that blockade really hurt. And the blockade turns up again.
I go back to that story from the University of Mississippi that I had last night. Last night I mentioned the fact that it called you to memory because the idiot woman was talking about how we've never seen the likes of the brave defenders of Mississippi, of Confederate Mississippi. And I remembered what you'd said. Yeah, the South had some victories up in amongst the Army in Northern Virginia, but they rolled up like a cheap rug out west.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a guy named William Barksdale and his men in Gettysburg, and Barksdale was riding at the head of his men and driving them forward, and one Union officer turned to his people and said, get the big red. And they dropped him off the horse. You go after the leaders first, don't you? And a professional football team, if you drop if the other guy's got an all-pro quarterback and you put him on the sidelines, things get tougher, don't they?
Well, things get kind of losery a lot of the times.
Well, so general, you know, brigadiers and colonels and even sometimes major generals running divisions. Sometimes, well, John Reynolds arrived at Gettysburg on July 1st, and he's talking with the the cavalry commander that was fighting him. And fighting his men dismounted. You were seeing the movie Gettysburg, haven't you? Sam Peckinpah.
No. Movie.
Played this Union Confederate general.
I'm kind of lost here.
Reynolds was up, supposedly overlooking the field when he arrived, and he came down and ran into the Union cavalry general, and they were talking, and then some sharpshooter dropped Reynolds. He says, those damn Enfields and Springfield was like a hitch at a third of a mile in the hands of a good man.
Yeah.
What blind luck?
What did the Confederates call the Sharps rifle, that damn Yankee rifle you can load on Sunday and shoot all week?
Yeah.
Hey, I got to get out of here, Bill, but it's awful good to hear from you.
Well, hang in there. Let's hope these things will, somebody will take command of this situation and our leadership, but don't count on it too hard.
No.
Take care.
Have a good night, Bill. Be good. Be well.
Good night.
Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. Glad I got the Skype issue sorted out. I guess I'm going to have to go out and find a new Ethernet cable. Sheesh. Let's see. One last note. This just came across my feed, and I want to share it with you because it's from our good friend Michael in Madison. He writes, "Remember at the Bundy Ranch, the teabaggers actually pointed firearms at law enforcement? And yet nothing happened to them? Feds didn't do shit. Imagine if a group of African Americans tried that in Ferguson, Missouri. Does anyone doubt for a second that they'd all be mowed down dead immediately? And keep in mind those tea crackers at the ranch were protesting against the government on behalf of some ignorant racist dickhole who simply didn't want to pay taxes on his stupid fucking cows. That's all. That's it. In Ferguson, they're protesting the murder of an unarmed teenager by the cops. Don't know about you, but to me that seems like something actually worth being angry about. But nope, not in America. Some fucking white people somewhere might have a cow grazing tax to piss and moan about. Hashtag white privilege. Black American youth have about a million times more cause to wave around a don't tread on me flag than any white American male. Amen, Michael. Amen. So with the program coming to a close, I'll go back online and try to find out what's going on in Ferguson at this hour, as they say on the for-profit media. It is 5 minutes before the hour. I did a little thought experiment this evening. Fresh off the success of Paul from Parts Unknown's birthday challenge, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. I mentioned fundraising at the beginning of the program and did not mention it again. And consequently, there has not been a single bit of support roll in. So we will begin the program tomorrow with a $310 hole to wrap up the week with Friday on the front porch. Thank you, one and all, for your participation. Your time is finite. I know that. And that you would share it in this little conversation is humbling and inspiring. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy and the porn chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox down in Australia, or up in Australia, depending on where one how one looks at things. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, for more than 10 years now saving progressive radio on the Internet. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT.org, ACHECT.org. The so-called environmental movement desperately needs a victory. The ACE Act is the victory that we can have. It can be the victory that leads to a victory over fracking, a victory over tar sands, and a victory over the seemingly ceaseless exploitation of human beings, human lives, and human health, all in the name of hydrocarbon profits. ACHECT.org. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you.